From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. What does it mean to taste the soul of a place? It might sound abstract, but it's a never-ending quest for LA chef and restaurateur Curtis Stone.
I think, in fact, the television show has helped us in our development of a really thoughtful menu.
Stone is a native Aussie who's been all over the world in search of new ingredients and exceptional wine. His global influences are evident at his restaurants Maud and Gwen. And now, PBS. He's the host of a new public television show premiering this weekend. It's called Field Trip with Curtis Stone. Hi.
How are you, Evan?
So great. I feel like we've come full circle in a way with this TV show.
That's so true. You're so right.
I mean, the first time I met you, you were just beginning to introduce spices and all of these amazing taste from the outback that no one had ever heard of here.
Right, yeah. It's funny, you know, travel's always been such a huge part of what I've done in a kitchen. And, you know, I think it sort of makes you the chef that you are. You go into different places and being inspired by different things. And it's always been something I've loved.
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons why those of us who end up cooking for a living need to travel.
Mm.
You like feed yourself.
Right. You know, I think as I get a little older, and I say a little older, but, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and I remember as a kid, as a 20-year-old, all I wanted to do was go and work in all these incredible chefs' restaurants, and then at some point you end up owning your own place, and it's harder to do, you know? It's a little odd if you call someone up and say, do you mind if I come hang out for a week in your kitchen? So this travel sort of allows you to do that, to experience things. And I think that's the most beautiful thing about being a chef. You never stop learning. You always get that opportunity to grow and see something different and then experiment with it. And yeah, it's what I've always loved.
It's funny, when I think about Australians as a people, I think about them as a globe-trotting people.
Yeah.
Because they're so far away that when Australians travel, they tend to go for a long time.
It's true. We're the ultimate couch surfers. You know, if you know an Aussie, they've usually got a visitor in town from somewhere back at home, because we're 14 hours from the West Coast in the US, and that's about as close as it gets. You know? Yeah, we're close to Southeast Asia, but Europe and America and stuff, it's a long way. So when we travel, we do it for a good amount of time.
So did you start traveling young?
I did, yeah. I finished my apprenticeship. We do like a 4-year apprenticeship in Australia, which is constant working with school in between. You go to school each week, but it's a good way to do an apprenticeship because you put in all of the knowledge that you learn in a classroom into practice. And I finished that apprenticeship, and yeah, I worked with a lot of European chefs in Melbourne, and all of them said the same thing. You know, if you're going to be any good, you've got to go work in Europe. So literally the day I passed my apprenticeship, I packed my bags and I left for London.
Maud is your Michelin-starred restaurant in Beverly Hills. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It's really intimate, and the tasting menu experience is also intimate. And you used to offer rotating menus focused on a single ingredient, which a lot of us loved, like, it's carrot. It's artichoke. But then last year, you started focusing on regions of the world. Why did you shift?
Well, look, we'd done nearly 4 years of the single ingredient menus, and it was a menu a month. So it was a really intense period of my life. You know, I think, you know, doing close to 50 menus in a short period of time was draining, because 10 course menus and one ingredient had to feature in every course for it to sort of exist. So you were constantly thinking and constantly creating, which I loved and adored. But at the same time, 4 years on, we sort of, I think as a team, got to the place where the spark had left us. You know, we weren't as excited about what the ingredients were going to be for the next year. And I thought, well, if we're feeling like that, then the guests soon will too. So before we ruin it, let's change it, you know, and evolve it into something different. And as we sat down and sort of spoke about what we thought was special about Maud, one thing that we all really adored was the wine pairing that the wine team would do each month around the food. And we'd even gotten to a place where I'd sort of say, just give me a wine that you want to feature and I'll create a dish around it, sort of reverse engineering it, as opposed to the chef makes the dish and the wine team have to scurry around and find a wine that suits it. So we spoke more and more about wine regions, and, you know, they're such incredible parts of the world, usually a wine region, because there's gastronomy around them, of course, and the art and craft of making a wine is an incredible part of what we do as a profession. And I thought, what if we replace the ingredient with a wine region? And of course, it's a stupid idea that you could never afford to do, and the team were just so excited by it. And I've always said, you know, as a chef, your real task is to keep your team happy. Because if you keep your team happy and motivated, they do an incredible job. And I looked at it and I thought, I can't walk away from it now. You know, they're too excited about it. So we have to do it. So we decided to pack our bags and take not the entire team go, but, you know, four or five of us, you know, usually to each region. So then, of course, we had to slow it down. We couldn't do a menu each month. So we did four a year. And yeah, the guests have loved it. And, you know, you sort of, I guess if we're doing the menu around Burgundy or Tuscany is the next one we're doing, you know, people can come in and do the pairing and taste a variety of Tuscan wines and learn so much about the microclimates and the different varietals that are made within that region. And then, of course, we interpret the region into a menu. So yeah, it's lots of fun.
And it seems a perfect entree into Field Trip.
Right.
This six-part series that's premiering on PBS this weekend, where you and your team at Maud visit several different regions of the world and then bring those insights back to the restaurant. When did you start thinking about the concept?
We started talking about what we were going to do, developing the menu and how hard it would be to do it. You know, you're going to go to a place, and I didn't want to go to a place and learn some of the familiar dishes and just come back and repeat them. I wanted to go and really try and interpret it. So we try and take into consideration the music and the history and the attitudes and the culture and, of course, the ingredients and the wines, but try and sort of really put our finger on what was interesting to us about that region. And as I was explaining it to a buddy of mine who is this incredible cinematographer, he's like, dude, this is an amazing idea for a TV show. And I was like, really? And he's like, just let me come and shoot it. So he literally came and shot the first one with one other person, and it was a team of two. And then
where was that?
That was Rioja. Yeah, which turned into an episode, believe it or not. I mean, everyone would say there's no way that that could, but, you know, they sort of just fly on the wall style, followed us around, and turns out that Dave Gorn, who's the director of photography, is just brilliant and would throw a drone up in the air and capture the region in the most magical way. And, you know, he was really taken with the different types of story. We'd go and meet a goat's cheese producer, and then of course we'd meet a winemaker, and we'd meet a chef who'd take us mushroom foraging. And so he sort of just followed us around, and he was really taken with it and said, you know, this is a show, I'm promising you. So he cut together a little 3 or 4 minute clip from our trip, and I saw it and I was like, wow, I think he's right. So that was it. We started a production company, and very earnest, you know, we do it on a very small budget, but because he's so talented, as are the rest of the guys at Shooter, it looks really beautiful. And yeah, it's been cool.
The episode I saw, you visit the Australian outback.
Yeah.
Kimberley.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that it blew me away, because the whole thing where you're visiting with this community of Aboriginal elders,
mm-hmm.
and you allow them to speak about their place and their culture to us, I found it very, very powerful, not to mention the fact that how gorgeous is that place?
Isn't it sensational? And I mean, as a people, the Aboriginal people mean so much to me, and they're such a beautiful race, group, community of people that when you're around them, you're inspired in a way that it's almost impossible to explain it.
I could really, you know, you seemed like so deeply chilled in that episode, like you were just there.
Right.
Like when a place just grabs you.
Yeah, it sure does. We were with Brian and Bundy, the two guys that were sort of community leaders and elders of that little area, the Bari people. And they talk about their ancestors. And for the most part, their ancestors have existed on that land, on that stretch of beach, for the last 40 or 50,000 years. And they talk about the good old days as if it was a generation ago. But what they're actually talking about is thousands of years ago, and the knowledge that they've built up around the land and the spirit. And we were talking about bush tucker, right? Food that they just get from the bush. And you do this walk through the bush with these guys, and they start talking about the type of fish that are in the ocean. They said, well, when this tree blooms, you know that the whales are chasing the mackerel. So the fish will be nice and fatty because the whales are coming in and the migrations happened. They have an understanding of their country, as they describe it, in a way that it baffles me.
If the world were as tuned in to the cycles of the earth,
right,
as they are, we would not be having this situation that we have now.
You're so right.
Talk a bit about the fishing experience you had where they put the fish to sleep.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That was crazy.
So we were talking about going to spearfish and go up into a river, and they're telling me, look, there's a big crocodile in this river, so we've got to be a bit careful, and da 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 da. And I was like, how do you manage that? You know, like, do you take the kids? Do you take the old fellas? Is it safe? And they said, well, the old fellas don't really come into the river because the crocs are so fast. The old fellas will go fishing in the tide pools. And I said, right, explain that to me. How do they do it? And they said, well, they take a root that has a property that takes the oxygen out of the water. So they grind up that root on a rock and then they flush it into the rock pool. And any fish that are hiding in under the rocks in the rock pool, they'll just float out. And I'm like, what? And I said, you've got to show me this. So sure enough, we go down to a rock pool and they do. And these fish literally just float into the surface after having this root popped in, the bunyad root, which I had real trouble pronouncing. And I'm like, so has it killed the fish? And they're like, no, no, it just takes the oxygen out. So they'll just sort of go into this like tranquil, you know, they'll stop moving, they'll float to the surface and you pick them up. And a minute later, they start flapping around again. And I'm like, it's the most unbelievable fishing that, you know, I've ever seen, and hunting and gathering ingredients and foods for over thousands of years. The knowledge, again, is just so crazy.
I'm sure there's going to be more episodes. Are they all going to drop at once, or is it going to be typical PBS style where it's week by week? You have to actually wait.
You've got to wait. Yeah, that's the old school way of doing it, isn't it? Yeah, so it's going to be week by week, and the first six are going to air now. And we've already started the next season, actually. We shot one in Rome and we were just in Sonoma. So
the Rome one that you shot with my friend Elizabeth, I have to wait till next season.
You've
got to
wait till
it.
Season two. I'm so sorry. She's
okay.
Amazing, by the way.
Oh, I'm so happy. Elizabeth. I mean, it makes me thrilled that you did that. It's been so great to catch up with you, Curtis.
So nice to see you.
I've been talking with LA chef Curtis Stone. His new show, distributed by American Public Television, is called Field Trip with Curtis Stone. It premieres this weekend on PBS. Check local listings. After the break, a visit from another favorite Aussie. Like Curtis, her job has also taken her all over the world, specifically six continents in 4 months. I'm talking with restaurant critic Besha Rodel when we return.